Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
All right, so let me start with Monday Night Football. The thing about Monday Night Football is that it's supposed to be fun, right? In fact, Monday Night Football is supposed to be one of the best things ever. It's supposed to be two good teams set apart from the rest of the league playing in prime time. It's supposed to be kick-ass. You know, something you look forward to. Because let's be real. Can we be real for a minute? Lots of people do not like their jobs. Hell, lots of people do not like their lives. And they live for the weekends. It's sad. It shouldn't be like that. It shouldn't be that way. It doesn't have to be that way. But for a lot of folks, it is that way. Thanks, Alvin. Way to pile on. I mean, it really is that sad, right? They're living for the weekend, but Monday Night Football, in a way, is an extension of the weekend. It's a way to extend the weekend, so it's awesome. At least it's supposed to be. Last night was not. Last night was none of that. And after suffering through a primetime game with the one-win Giants last week, what we got last night was a game between the two-win Pats and the zero-win Jets. That was our reward. That was our so-called carrot. Right, a carrot. A carrot covered in crap. A crap-covered carrot. Get! I mean, sure, there are certain games that are so bad they're good, but that was not one of them. That was just bad. So bad that the Jets, one of the worst teams in the history of the NFL, were winning for most of that game. I'm not sure what's more humiliating, the fact that the Pats were losing to the Jets or the fact that they were losing to the Joe Flacco Jets. Called a tie for last. I mean, these are the New England Patriots, winners of six Super Bowls in the past 20 years, led by the greatest coach in NFL history. And they were losing to Joe Flacco and the Jets. Man, you want to talk about a fall from grace. When it goes fast. Am I right, Chouds? You go from competing for a Super Bowl every single year to trying to grind out a win in prime time against an 0-8 Jets team. Bill Belichick should be able to pull 53 randos off the street, men, women, and children, and still beat the Jets. But Belichick and 53 professional football players were having a damn hard time of it last night. You know those moments when you see something and you know it's real, but your brain can't make sense of it? Like, you see it, but you just can't get your head around it. You can't figure out how to process what you're seeing. And in those moments, you've got to come up with some sort of alternate explanation for what's happening so it does make sense. That's what happened last night. Bill Belichick losing to Adam Gase is so weird and so bizarre that folks were rolling with the theory that Belichick was trying to lose that game because he didn't want the Jets to get Trevor Lawrence. That's how hard folks were working to make sense of that horrible display last night. Like, because there's no way the Patriots could actually be losing to the Jets. So there's got to be something else at work here, right? And I don't blame folks for trying to explain it that way. I mean, how else do you explain Joseph Vincent Flacco doing this to a Bill Belichick defense?
First and 10, Flacco play fake, steps up, throws, deep ball to the right. It is caught for the touchdown. Rashad Perriman over the shoulder grab. Flacco perfectly thrown, and Perriman does the rest. Jets go in front on a 50-yard bomb.
You know what's even crazier about that TD? You know what was one of the great things in a night of crappy things? You know what was great last night? You know what was one of my favorite moments of the entire NFL season? The fact that Joe Flacco passed Joe Montana on the all-time passing yardage list with that bomb. That is absolutely mind-boggling. That is incredible. And you know Flacco was thinking, hey, Joe, scoreboard, look up at it.
I will. I'm going to.
Joe's the GOAT. Joe's the GOAT. Joe Montana. Joe Montana is the GOAT. 4-0 in Super Bowls. Joe's the GOAT. Yeah, well, I'm better than the GOAT. Whatever that is. And then he went out and he chased that with this.
Flacco, shotgun. Steps off his back foot, lofts it, end zone, It is out of bounds. Crowder believes he was in bounds and believes he has a touchdown. Crowder hauled it in.
Well, Crowder on an inside route to the corner. 1 foot. It is a touchdown.
Boy.
They're going to overrule that incomplete. It will be a New York Jets touchdown.
Crowder somehow toe-tapped it in for the score.
The only thing that would have made that better is if Flacco was shouting, hey!
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 Every time he threw one of those TD passes, hey!
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 Break, hey!
Hey! One more note on Flacco before I move on.
Hey.
I cannot get enough of the sideline shots of Joe Flacco during games. Like, I want a full-time Flacco cam on him when the defense is on the field. You got most quarterbacks studying a tablet, talking to their receivers or their coaches or the offensive line, you know, showing some sign of life, focused, locked in, you know, like, I don't know, caring. Not Joe Flacco. Hey, he's sitting there staring off into space, zoned out, looking like he'd rather be anywhere else in the world other than where he actually was in that moment. You know, like Adam Hawk during this show. Hey. I'd love to know exactly what the hell that guy's thinking about in those moments, because it sure doesn't seem like it's got anything at all to do with the game of football or his job. But then again,
hey,
it's not like he had to look at a tablet or any Xeroxed pics of the D.
Hey,
or talk to anybody, because what the guy was doing, was working against the alleged greatest defensive coach ever. And his alleged vaunted secondary. Because Joe Flacco airing it out and then looking stone-faced was not even the weirdest part of last night. Because the Jets, the 0-8 Jets, were beating the Pats. I cannot stress that enough. Adam Gase was getting over on Bill Belichick. Adam Gase was turning Bill Belichick inside out. That's weird. That's weird as hell. It was so weird and so bad that the announcers on that game were trying to make the case that the Jets had a bunch of playmakers on the outside. Probably picked up on that, right? Yeah, I mean, sure, right, of course. Like, it's unfair how many playmakers the 0-8 Jets have. What? I mean, does the salary cap apply to everybody except the Jets? Where do they get all these playmakers? Do they get extra picks in the draft? How the hell do the Jets have so many more weapons on the outside than everybody else? Like, that's how hard that crew was selling all their explosive talent on the outside. Right. Yeah, so many playmakers. That's the real reason why they had not scored more than 10 points in the four games leading into last night, because they had so many playmakers. Now, I'll tell you what the reason is. The reason is the Patriots are a shell of themselves. They're flat out not a good football team. It's got nothing to do with tanking. It's got everything to do with the fact that their defense was getting shredded by, Joe Flacco.
Hey.
But, as bad as the Pats are, they couldn't keep it up forever. They were not going to outsuck the Jets. You can't do that. Nobody can. It's impossible. The Jets were determined to lose that game. You saw signs of it in the first quarter when Gase decided to punt on 4th-and-3 from the Pats 41. Can we stop on that point for a minute? You're 0-8 and you're punting on 4th-and-3 from your opponent's 41. The quit, right? The quit is so strong in this one. The cowardice is so strong in this one. The commitment to getting Trevor Lawrence is so strong in this one. And sure enough, the Jets did come on in the fourth quarter. There was that time when they had 12 guys on the field when the Pats were going to kick a field goal. I mean, that was effectively handing the Pats a first down. And then the Pats couldn't do anything with it, and they end up kicking a field goal. Two bad teams unable to figure out a way to win. And if we're being honest, the real highlight of the game, other than when Flacco passed Joe Montana, was when somebody was absolutely stunned by the refs calling holding on a Pats receiver. Listen.
Blockers in front of him, took a big shot. There's a flag down. It's a gain of 9. I think it's going to come back.
We're going to get a hold.
And Harris stays down.
Holding. Offense number 16. 10-yard penalty. First down.
That's Myers, the receiver.
Pretty cool at the Pats sign. Lil Jon for last night. Honestly, I bet John could have helped that offense last night. I haven't heard a better mic'd up reaction since the "we did it" guy celebrated the Spurs maintaining home court advantage over the Grizz back in the day.
Convex to the rebound, a buzzer sounds, and San Antonio survives and takes a 2-0 lead.
So, Clones, let me start this week by asking you a question. What do you want when you're craving protein or you need more energy? I'll tell you what you don't want. Bars, sugary snacks, energy drinks. No, you know what you want? You want beef, pure and simple. So where is the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your father's jerky. Not shriveled, not dry, not tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. So it's tender and tasty. It's not tough. So why is it so good? Because Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for their relentless commitment to quality. They take smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. Old Trapper is packed with protein, and it comes in four amazing flavors to satisfy all your cravings. Quality smoked meat at its finest that goes with you wherever you go. So make sure you look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality that you are purchasing. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, just ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Just when you're thinking the most Jets thing ever would be for them to beat the Patriots and hurt their chances of getting Lawrence, just when you thought they were going to lose by winning, they come through. Hey, listen, to tie this whole thing up, don't kid yourselves. This is not a team with a ton of pride or dignity or any at all. And it sure as hell is not a well-coached team. And when they needed to, they manned down. When it would have been so much easier to just give up and actually win, they dug deep. They battled. They figured out a way to lose. Because in the end, the Pats go down the field, they kick the game winner, and in so doing, they didn't just win the game, they spared the entire country. Because the last thing this country needed was for that game to go to overtime. And yes, Chouds, yes, Pats fan, your team did what it had to do. They had to have that one, and they were able to grind it out. And no, there are no style points. But you beat one of the worst teams ever. And they were playing their backup, and you were a 10-point favorite. Congratulations. I know you're not going to apologize for that win, but you should. Exactly what does that get you? Don't act like that saved your season, because it didn't. It just kept your season alive for a few more hours, because you're not back on track. You're 3-5, and you have to deal with the Ravens next. And you're not good, period. As for the Jets, good thing they woke the hell up before it was too late. Nearly choked and won, jeopardizing that first pick overall. Man, that lack of focus is exactly why you're such an embarrassment. It's why you're the Jets. Eyes on the bleeping prize, fellas. Now is not the time to let go the rope. Now is not the time to fall off the path. Now is not the time to start trying or showing professionalism. You came this close to choking and winning. The hell are you thinking? If management really wanted you to win games, they would have fired Crazy Eyes a long time ago. You're not in it to win it. You're in it to lose it. And don't forget it. So get back at it and do all those things that you were previously doing. You know, all the wrong things. The things that got you to 0-8 in the first place. In other words, man the hell down and finish the job. Now is not the time to convince yourselves or anybody else that you matter. That you have heart, that you have grit, that you have pride. You don't. Or you wouldn't be 0-8 in the first place. Do your job. And your job is to do everything wrong. Don't forget it. Come that close and choke. Come on, man. You got a perfect season working. Don't blow it now.
10-yard penalty.
What? Marquez Valdez-Scantling is my guest. Marquez, good to have you back. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, good. Hey, listen, before we get into the season overall and the game this weekend, can you take me back for a minute to Thursday night against the 49ers? You had that 52-yard TD reception in the second quarter. Man, it really was a thing of beauty. Can you take me through the play? Exactly what did you see?
Yeah, so on that play, there's it was kind of just like if we get the right look, I was going to be able to get behind the safety. Actually, the safety that I had just came in. That was his first play in the game. I guess the previous safety had went down to injury the previous play before, and so we came back in after the 2-minute warning timeout, and we wanted to take a shot down the field, and we got the perfect look, and I was able to get behind the safety and go in and score a touchdown.
All right, so help me with this. The story goes that in the huddle before that play, Aaron Rodgers said to you, quote, you want the play, and you did. Rodgers said afterwards, quote, went back into the huddle, figured I was throwing him a touchdown, and sure enough, I did, end quote. I mean, is that pretty much how that went down? And did you know you were going to score on that play the moment that it was called?
Yeah, I mean, I knew I was going to get the ball. He kind of just, like you said, we were talking about a few different plays on the sideline and like what we liked and what we wanted to come out with. And Aaron looked at me and was like, do you like the play call? And I was like, yeah, throw it to me. And he's all right. And left the huddle, and sure enough, the ball was in the air.
I mean, you make it sound pretty easy when I know nothing is. But then again, you and Aaron make those deep balls seem so easy and so simple when obviously they aren't. So how much work goes into those plays? And then how much chemistry do the two of you have on the field right now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you got a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, you can't really ask for a better signal caller, better ball thrower. He's the best in the NFL. He's been like that for a very long time. So he makes it pretty easy. You just have to do your job and get open and catch the ball.
Marquez Valdez-Scantling is joining us. You know, the other thing about that, too, when you look at the work that you guys all do in the red zone, in the third quarter, you had that one-yard TD reception. He's now thrown 18 touchdowns, and he's gotten zero INTs in the red zone this year. So what about that area of the field? How would you describe how you and the other receivers work with him in the red zone?
No, it's just it's a combination of everything, especially when you get down in the red zone. You know, it's never pretty down in the red zone. Windows are a lot tighter. Get a lot more grabbing, and so just being able to have a quarterback that can really take care of the ball and get guys in the right positions to make plays with our, you know, offensive scheme and things of that nature. You know, you can't really complain when you got 18 touchdowns and no interceptions. I think it's a pretty good ratio. I think anybody would ask for a ratio that good.
I'm thinking 18.
And, you know, it's just a credit to him.
Sorry to interrupt. I was going to say an 18-0 TD to pick ratio in the red zone is a pretty good ratio. And then on top of that, you got Davante Adams. Of course, you put him in the mix. When he's going off the way that he did and you're going off the way you did, what is the ceiling on this offense and how dangerous is it overall?
You know, I think the ceiling is there is none. And it's not even with me. I mean, obviously, Davante Adams is the best wide receiver in the NFL, and it's not even close. I've been saying that forever since I got to the league. And that's a tough thing to say that a guy is better than me, especially at my position. But, you know, not even the stats. I mean, obviously his stats are, you know, crazy. But, you know, just the way he goes about his business every single day, you wouldn't ask for a better leader, you know, a better vet to have in the room to show you the ropes, a better guy to learn from. And then just with our offense, you know, any given game, it can be somebody new. You know, it's just not always Davante. We got, you know, a great running back, great quarterback, you know, great wide receivers, great backup running backs, like, it's, you know, great tight ends. So the list goes on and on. And I think that, you know, just with so many talented guys on our side of the ball, you know, we can pretty much do anything we want on offense, you know, as long as we're all on the same page.
Marquez Valdez-Scantling joining us. And to keep you on that one point, I love that. That's not the first time I've heard you say that. But to say that Davante is the best receiver in the league and it's not even close, and it's hard for you to admit that because you never want to admit somebody's better than you. Like, you talked about his approach and his work ethic, but what's the great separation? Like, what separates him from everybody else at that position?
You know, I think he's a unique talent because he's not the fastest, he's not the strongest, he's not the quickest. But I think that he uses his strengths to, you know, his advantage over anybody else. You know, the things that he can do, you know, off the line of scrimmage and the separation that he can create, you know, in his routes and the way he can move his body. Those are things that, you know, a lot of people don't notice. They just see the end result of him catching the football. But being a wide receiver, you get to really appreciate the art that he can do from, you know, the line of scrimmage into the middle of his route, to the top of his route, to catching the football, you know, just the separation he can create. You know, it's truly an art just to watch him, you know, run routes, you know, every single day. And, you know, like I said, I couldn't ask for a better guy to learn from.
You know, speaking of which, when you talk about route running and you talk about the art, your position coach, Jason Vrabel, has talked about how you've taken your route running to a new level to the point where it's not just enough for you to beat a guy in practice. You're running the route to the exact yard and you're beating your guy. How valuable has that attention to detail been for you this year?
You know, I think it's just the growth of my, you know, of my play. over the years. Because, I mean, coming out of college, you know, I was just, you know, a guy that can, you know, run fast and do a lot of different things. But being able to just hone in on the small details is what's going to, you know, get you to be, you know, great in this league. And I think that just having Coach Vrabel, you know, just being able to, you know, focus in on that all training camp and throughout the year, and, you know, having a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers who wants things done a certain way. And, you know, with those two things, you know, I think that, you know, it worked out for me.
Marquez Valdes-Scantling joining us for a few more moments. You know, when you look at that game against the 49ers last week, that was something of a rematch in the NFC Championship game. And then in some way, it really wasn't, because so much has changed since then. They're not the same team because they were pretty banged up. But what about this Packers team? How does this team compare to the one that went to the NFC Championship game last year? For instance, does it feel like you're even better this year than you were then?
You know, every year is different. You know, every team is different. You know, everybody's going to have injuries. Everybody's dealing with the same things with COVID protocols and having guys to be sat out and whatnot. You know, so I think it's just whoever handles it the best throughout the year is the team that's going to be the most successful. And speaking about, you know, the team we have this year and the team that we had last year, I think that this year we, you know, we've been the second year in our system under Matt LaFleur, being more comfortable with how everything works and how to do things and how to operate, you know, as an offense and, you know, things of that nature. So I think that, you know, we've definitely grown, you know, in a positive manner, but it's too early to say, you know, if we're better or worse than last year. Cause I mean, obviously getting to the NFC Championship is always the goal, and getting to the Super Bowl is the ultimate goal. So we'll see at the end of the year, you know, which team was better.
You know, when you and I spoke over the summer, we talked about the work that you do in St. Petersburg, caring for people without homes, and the Christmas drive that you do every single year. This year is obviously really different because of the pandemic. How has that impacted your plans and your work?
Yeah, no, I haven't even – I'm still trying to figure out, you know, exactly how that's going to go, because obviously there's so many restrictions of, you know, how things are done now opposed to how I've been doing them in the past. So I'm just trying to figure out how we can, you know, get that to still be beneficial for the people down there in need without, you know, breaking any rules or putting anybody at risk to get sick. So still working on that. But obviously that's the goal, is still the same, and still want to help out as many people as possible.
You bet. Let me finally ask you this. Your dog Ace, I see, recently celebrated his third birthday. How's Ace doing? How is life with him? What's he like to hang out with?
Ace is the best, man. He's right here next to me right now, actually. Especially, you know, being up, you know, in Green Bay, Wisconsin, a small town, a long way from home. So obviously, you know, it gets pretty lonely out here. So having, you know, Ace around, he always helps me get through the tough times, or whenever, you know, things don't go right. You know, you come home and he has the same type of excitement every single day. You know, there's never any bad blood between me and Ace, you know. So I think that's the greatest thing about having a dog, is that no matter, you know, what goes on outside of your house, as soon as you get home, so same level of excitement every single time.
Preach. He's the absolute best. He's a wide receiver for the Packers, coming off that big game against San Francisco. He is the founder of the Scantling Receiver Academy. Played his college ball at South Florida. Green Bay 6-2. They're at home against Jacksonville. Marquez Valdes-Scantling, my guest. Marquez, great to have you back. Appreciate you. And I always appreciate our conversations.
Thank
Thanks so much.
Thank you. I appreciate you always.
Quick word about Chris Carson, running back for the Seahawks. And he's having a solid season, despite the fact that he's missed a couple of games with a bum wheel. He suffered a sprain in week 7 in that OT loss to the Cards. So the Hawks are obviously eager to get him back, considering what he does for their run game and the play action for Russ, and the fact that he's in the top 10 of the league in average yards per carry. I mean, the guy is a difference maker. They need him. They need him, and they need him back on the field. Russ needs him back on the field. The Hawks need him back on the field. But they're not the only ones. They are not the only ones who want him on the field. Of course, Fantasy Guy wants him on the field, too. Fantasy Guy is waiting for that alert. Fantasy Guy is waiting to hear that Carson is ready to roll. So while we're on the topic, let me give you my quick and standard disclaimer on fantasy football before we get any further. Fantasy football is great. Fantasy football has been outstanding for the sport and for fans. I'm all about it. I'm here for it. I like fantasy football. I'm here for it. Fantasy guy, on the other hand, is not great. Fantasy guy is not one and the same as fantasy football. All right, let's make a really important distinction. I'm here for fantasy football. I'm not here for fantasy guy. And another distinction that needs to be made. Not all fantasy players are fantasy guy. You can play fantasy football without being fantasy guy. We all know who I'm talking about. The game itself is awesome. A lot of people who play the game are awesome. But some of the dorks who do are not. You know the tool bags that I'm talking about. You know the D-bags who ruin it for everybody. The bags who talk about their teams like you actually give a damn. You know, the ones who bring you over to their desk just to show you how many points they need on a Monday night to pull off their comeback against their friend from college that you've never met and that you do not give a damn about. You know, the weirdos who write power rankings for their Facebook group and pollute your eardrums with all their trade possibilities. And these, by the way, the guy I'm talking about right here, that is the least offensive of the fantasy guy D-bag. The really obscene ones, the ones who actually need professional help, are the psychos who rush to social media and bitch out or even threaten an NFL player who did not perform to their liking. It happens all the time. It happens every week. It happens every year. In 2020, for as strange as it has been, is no different. Because this past weekend, when the Hawks were in Buffalo, some loser on Instagram slid into Chris Carson's DMs and wrote the following to him. Quote, "Yo, P-word, tape your foot up and go the F in. You're killing my fantasy team right now. F you." End quote. It's an actual quote. A direct quote, except for the fact that the guy actually typed out the F-bombs and actually called Chris Carson the word that starts with a P that I absolutely cannot and would not ever say on the radio. Keep in mind, Carson did not even travel with the team to Buffalo. So telling a guy to tape up his foot and get the F in there during a game that he was more than 2,500 miles away from is not just moronic, it's physically impossible. Apparently, though, Carson was checking his DMs at that time. Because what else are you going to do laid up on the other side of the country while your team is playing? Carson decided to respond. Quote, "F your fantasy team. Come make me play." End quote. Well, that's pretty succinct. That's pretty concise. That's pretty short and to the point. Probably a holy bleep moment for the jackwagon who thought that Carson was in Buffalo on the sidelines and not on the couch using his phone. Either that or the highlight of that guy's life. One or the other. Except that idiot was not going to go away, right? He wrote back to Carson, quote, "What's the address?" Classic internet tough guy. Like he's actually going to roll up on a 220-pound professional athlete. Carson, though, again, laid up, wasted no time in thumbing out his home address in Bellevue, Washington. And he added, and I quote, "Your ass better pull up." End of amazing quote. Your ass better pull up. I mean, holy hell. Meet me in Temecula has officially become meet me in Bellevue at my house. Meet me in Temecula, right when I thought that it could never get better than that. It just did. And as you probably could have surmised, the keyboard warrior went dead silent and straight ghosted. Because, of course, like one dude wants the smoke and his name Chris Carson. The other dude is some anonymous toolbox who hopefully lost his fantasy game along with whatever dignity he still had left. I mean, you could argue that Carson got hooked, and that's never a good thing. I'm constantly talking about that, that guys like that, the toolboxes that try to get people on social have nothing better to do. That's the biggest win of their life. Like, they won their day, they won their life. They got an athlete to respond, or they hooked an athlete. That is such a win for them. This is why I've said a million times, do not get hooked. This is part of the territory. This is what you signed up for. Don't do it. I mean, best case scenario, the optics are bad. Bad case scenario, you do something really injurious to your career. You know, hitting some degenerate up and telling him, F your fantasy team, here's my address, your ass better pull up. Might not be the best idea, but you know what? It's not the worst look. And on some level, I get it. On some level, it's kind of cool. And I'll explain that. Like, in other words, my foot is injured, but there's nothing wrong with my fists or my thumbs or my mouth. Come pull up and find out. Better yet, quote, your ass better pull up. Again, I am not suggesting that athletes fight fans, nor do I ever think it's a good idea to get hooked by some rando or some egg on social. But you could see where an athlete who is already hurt and frustrated because he's not out there in the fight with his actual brothers, you could see where that athlete who's not in the fight with his brothers might welcome an actual fight with some idiot who is sliding into his DMs and questioning his manhood. You could see where a guy like Carson might say, you know, I'll take the good with the bad. I'll take the idiot fans. It's part of what I signed up for. I know this. But there is an actual line. And buying a ticket to a game, or better yet, having a guy on your fantasy team does not give you license to cross that line. And if one more dude does cross that line, if one more dude comes at me and questions my manhood, it's go time. You want to question my toughness. You want to question my manhood. You want to question my willingness to play through it. Come see me about it. Here's my address. You don't even need to call ahead of time. I'll be here. I mean, again, like, I don't condone it, but I can see how an athlete would feel that way because there is a line. That's my point. There is a line. There is a line, and there are consequences if you cross that line. You can't just do and say whatever the hell you want as a fan. And as of now, despite having his home address and despite being invited to pull up, this rando has not pulled up, which is not surprising because the only thing more certain than fantasy guy being a D-bag is fantasy guy being an all bark, no bite D-bag because Carson's there and the door is unlocked and he's waiting and this guy's got the address and was invited to pull up. Again, fantasy football is great. People who play fantasy football are fine. They're great, but not all of them. There is that special breed that's not. The breed that goes online and calls out athletes and slides into their DMs and questions their manhood and then gets invited to pull up and do something about it and doesn't. Probably better that way. I bet you did not know this. Did you know that a fire department responds to a fire every 24 seconds? That said, we have teamed up with First Alert, the most trusted brand in fire safety, to help you be ready for the unexpected and to review some key safety tips. Smoke and carbon monoxide alarms can help provide an early warning in the event of a home emergency. Having enough First Alert smoke and carbon monoxide alarms is one of the very best things that you can do for your home and your family. So what you want to do is install alarms on every single level and in every bedroom of your home. Once the alarms are installed, it's really important to maintain them by testing them with regularity. And remember, alarms do not last forever. They do have to be replaced at least every 10 years. If you can't remember the last time you replaced yours, it's time to get the unit replaced completely. Here's a great option, my favorite. First Alert's combination smoke and carbon monoxide alarm with a 10-year sealed battery. As mentioned, the alarm does provide 2-in-1 protection against both smoke and carbon monoxide, and I don't have to worry about that battery change for a decade. Lastly, make sure you take time to discuss home safety with your family. You want to plan and you want to practice an escape route, and remember to practice it at least twice a year. For more information, on fire safety products, safety tips, and educational activities that you can do at your home with your family. Go to firstalert.com/fireprevention month. firstalert.com/fireprevention month. Dalvin Cook is my guest. Dalvin, great to have you on today. How are you?
I'm doing good. Appreciate you for having me.
Appreciate you doing it. Great to have you. So before we talk about Sunday's game, I want to go back a week to before against Green Bay when you put up a career-high 226 yards from scrimmage in a game where you became the first player since the merger to score a TD on the first four possessions of the game. I know you're looking ahead, but if I could get you to look back, what do you remember most about that game against Green Bay?
It's special. Playing Green Bay in Minnesota, it's so special. Winning in Lambeau, and that was big for us, gaining confidence. And that was a big game, for us up front, for getting that many yards.
And then you chase that with a career-high 206 rushing yards and a new career-high 252 yards from scrimmage on Sunday against the Lions. Obviously, enormous numbers. What do those marks mean to you?
It means a lot. You keep working, you'll get the results, that you're working for. With me, it's all about, giving those guys up front, my old linemen, the reward that they deserve, and that's scoring touchdowns and getting yards.
Dalvin, you've always been really quick to give the guys up front that kind of respect and that kind of credit, always. What is it about this particular group that makes them so good and so effective?
I think with a good old line is all about that continuity, being on the same page, having that understanding of what's going on. I think the guys are starting to understand, what we're trying to get done as far as running the football. And they keep them cut off the ground, too. So they got a good understanding of what we're trying to get done as an offense.
Vikings running back Dalvin Cook is my guest. In the build-up to the game, Lions running back Adrian Peterson called you, quote, a lethal weapon. Knowing how much you respect him, knowing how much you admire him, how did it feel to hear him say that and then for you to go out and have that huge game that you had?
It means a lot, stepping in right after he left. Just him being that legend he is in Minnesota and me digging into the history and seeing the things he's done here and left his mark here. That means a lot. I'm a living legend at the position. So coming from AP, that's always big news as a running back.
I'm kind of curious. When you've watched him and admired him for a long time, he's 35 years old now. He rushed for nearly 900 yards last season. He had a 1,000-yard season the year before that. What have you learned from watching him in terms of how to take care of your body and how to keep producing late in your career?
That's definitely the thing that I picked up from it. The consistency, the being available for your team. And, he was that. And, say he's 35, that's 10 years older than me. And he's still, running the ball like no other. So, I picked up so much from him just from watching him as a pro. You don't even know.
Dalvin Cook is joining us. From watching you afar, my sense is you're always going to be confident in yourself and your abilities. But when you're having the season that you're having right now, has your confidence gone to a new level? Does it feel like you can break one every single time you get one?
Yeah, I always felt like that. I think getting the guys around me to believe that was a different change for me. I think the guys around me definitely believe, this can be a home run, every time we touch the ball. And that's what it all comes down to. Me believing that was always a thing for me. But getting the people around me, to believe and understand that was key for me.
Talking to Dalvin Cook, it seems to me also watching you, you want to be that complete player, that complete back. I want to point out that on Irv Smith's second TD, you had this huge blitz pickup that gave Kirk Cousins time to make that play. Head coach Mike Zimmer said after the game, it proves why you're a captain and the guys love you because you can make the huge play, but you love the dirty work as well. Where does that mindset come from?
I'm just wanting to win the football game. I hate losing. That's something that never sits right with no athlete. But, just willing to give it all to see my teammates succeed, see my team succeed. And the ultimate challenge is, what will you do without the football in your hand? And I think, without the football in my hand, I can still make a play, and that was a play to be made right there.
We're talking to Dalvin Cook. And in fact, in terms of not having the football in your hand, I would even take it a step further, when you're off the field or you're around the facility, you know, in terms of leadership and that mentality, you said recently, quote, we got a bunch of young guys and this team is looking for somebody to grab them and show them the ropes, end quote. Obviously, you feel like you're one of those guys. When you were coming up, who were the guys that showed you the ropes when you first arrived, and how are you passing that on now?
Yeah, when I first got here, I had a room that had the Latavius Murray, Jared McKinney, you know, just guys in the locker room. Generally, I had Teddy Bridgewater, Xavier Rhodes, Everson Griffin, all those guys was in the locker room with me. And just seeing a young guy that just wanted to play football, didn't really know. And, you know, just some guys giving me some tips. And I think Jared and Latavius Murray, you know, was the guys that I leaned on the most because they was in the room with me.
Davin, what is it about Teddy? I mean, Teddy obviously has overcome so much, and the guy's got, like, this unbelievable courage and grit and this gumption and this want to. But, man, guys love Teddy. Guys absolutely love Teddy. What separates Teddy from so many other guys? Why do guys love and respect him so much?
I think the guy that just being him. You never see a dull moment from Teddy. You know, we all human. We have our times. But I think Teddy does a great job of blocking the outside noise out and just always keeping that smile on his face to bring joy to others. I think that's why people always just gravitate to him. And, you know, we know the type of player he is on the field, but I think off the field, you know, his personality is key.
I like that. I like that a lot. That's not easy to do. Dalvin Cook joining us. Listen, I understand you're about the team, but you do lead all running backs in so many different metrics. I'm just going to come right out and ask, are you the best running back in the NFL now?
Before any of the stats started, you know, looking how they started looking, you know, I thought that about myself. You know, I always think highly of myself. I push myself so hard. I work hard. You know, I never, you know, talk down on any other running back. And I put the work in that I need to put in, and I think I'm still getting better. You know, it's a lot of work for me to be done. A lot of stuff I can unlock as far as my talent. Just got to take myself there, and you know. Everybody's confident about themselves, but, you know, not being arrogant or nothing, you know, just got to keep working.
So where can you improve, and how much better can you actually get?
I say it's a lot out there. You know, I watch them and look at the little stuff that I could do better. And it's a lot that I can, you know, go out there and help my team do better on.
Dalvin Cook, my guest. I'm going to ask you about Snickers in 1 second. One last follow-up question. When you talk about that work ethic, that grind, I'm always fascinated by that. You don't get to that league or that level without putting in time and doing the work. But that ultimate grind, that separation, where does that come from? Have you always been like that, or did you develop that?
Yeah, I've always been like that. You know, just seeing guys, you know, where I'm from that was so good and wondering how was they so good. And I had an opportunity to play in the same high school and follow behind the same college as Devontae Freeman, and he was one of those guys that just worked, you know, what didn't have all the stars coming out of high school, but just worked, kept his head down and just worked, didn't worry about nothing, just but the work. And, you know, the results came from him later by getting drafted and, you know, getting the contract and just, you know, playing some good football. And I think that's where I got it from.
It's an example. It's a model. It's something you can see that it did work. Now, as I mentioned, you got a lot of accolades coming your way, including the fact that you received the Snicker chain for the hungriest player. What does that honor mean to you? What is the chain all about?
Yeah, it's definitely an honor, you know, to be named the Snickers hungriest player for week 9. And, you know, it's a chain that I've seen guys, you know, this year that's been wearing it. You know, Aaron Jones, I've seen Devontae Adams wearing it, Chase Claypool, all those guys. And, you know, I think it's an award for guys that's going out there and making some big plays and some big moments on the field. And I think, you know, these past couple of weeks, you know, I've been making some plays that got me this chain, and I think that's what it's all about.
What are the chances? I mean, like, what's the philosophy, the mindset? Can you get that chain back again in the same season? What would that mean to you?
I don't know the thing behind that. You know, that'd be good, cool. And then, you know, if I do have another monster game, I think it'd be best to give it to one of the guys up front. You never know. So,
yeah.
I got to talk to Snicker.
Dude, you got to take care of the big dogs in front. You know that. You know that already. Yeah. You already said that. Dalvin Cook, my guest. He's a Pro Bowl selection. He is having an absolute monster year. He is the recipient of the Snickers chain. He appeared courtesy of Snickers in the Hungriest Player Award today. Dalvin, I appreciate you. I'm glad we finally got you on. Great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you, Jim.
Like last month, the White Sox, I mean, the White Sox are a good team. They're a good team with good young talent. And they went looking for a new manager. Instead, what they found was an old manager. A 76-year-old manager, Tony La Russa. And even at that time, that struck me as a really weird hire. Not only because they initially hired him 41 years ago, and not only because he has not managed in nearly a decade, but because this guy's made a number of comments that demonstrate that he really is out of touch with today's players and with today's game and didn't like a lot of what he saw. And the fact that one of the reasons team owner Jerry Reinsdorf pushed so hard for La Russa, according to Jeff Passan, was that the firing of La Russa, quote, was owner Jerry Reinsdorf's great regret, end of quote. So the whole thing is just so weird and so wrong. And now it's gone to a totally new level. Now it's gone to a totally new level because now we get word that La Russa was charged with driving under the influence one day before he was hired by the White Sox. So like baseball loves its initial isms. So here's another one for you. TLRDUI. TLRDUI. His second. Because we already knew about the first, obviously, from back in 2007. When he was found napping it out at a traffic light in Florida. That's where this is from.
RSTUVVZTUVXYXZ.
TLRDUI. So, as much as you all love that, I'm careful about how often I play that because there is nothing funny about driving under the influence. And it's especially unfunny when TLR DUI'd, because just 5 weeks earlier, the first time this happened, just 5 weeks earlier, one of his own players, Josh Hancock, was killed when he drove drunk and hit a parked truck. So think about that for a minute. 5 weeks earlier, he lost one of his own players to drinking and driving. Despite going through something horrific like that, he himself decides to get bombed and get behind the wheel of his own car. It's like, it's unfathomable, unconscionable. So on the day that TLR filed a guilty plea for his DUI, this is the first case, he said the following in a statement, quote, "I accept full responsibility for my conduct. I assure everyone that I have learned a very valuable lesson and this will never occur again," end quote. I mean, everything about that's wrong. He obviously did not learn a valuable lesson. And while it's only a charge at this point, it seems pretty likely that it did occur again. And according to ESPN, here are the details that resulted in TLR being charged with DUI again. Quote, "Chicago White Sox manager Tony La Russa was charged with driving under the influence after he allegedly ran his car into a curb in February, leaving it smoking on the side of a Phoenix area road," end quote. Pretty obvious problem, right? Pretty obvious, serious problem with the fact that he was allegedly boozed up and driving again. You should never be behind the wheel after you've been drinking, especially if you're that guy. Especially when there are cabs, there's Uber, there's Lyft. You can summon a freaking car on your phone in minutes. It has never been easier to not drink and drive than it is right now. So there's zero excuse for drinking and then driving. Zero. You're putting yourself at risk. You're putting everybody else on the road at risk. You could kill or disable yourself or others. Man, it is so insanely selfish. It is so insanely stupid. It is so insanely reckless. You know, first question, what was TLR doing DUIing again? And secondly, how the hell do you hit a curb so hard? How do you hit a curb so badly that you leave your rig smoking on the side of the road? Was he doing some sort of Mad Max drive through Arizona? When ESPN reached out to TLR about the DUI, he said, quote, "I have nothing to say," end quote, and he hung up. Good stuff, T. Good stuff, TLR DUI. Great work. Way to own that. Way to take responsibility for your actions. Way to be a dude leading from the front. A Chicago team spokesman told ESPN they were aware of the case, quote, "because this is an active case, we cannot comment further at this time," end quote. All right, so I get that. I get that the team can't comment, but I can. Hiring TLR was stupid when we only knew about one DUI. Now it's even dumber than that. And the White Sox do have some questions to answer. Like, what did they know about the second DUI, and when did they know about it? Because if they didn't know about it, it seems like that's grounds for dismissal. And if they did know about it, then that means they're cool with it. Either way, you got a problem. And according to The Athletic, a team spokesman said they did know about it before they hired him. Wait, what? To quote that random voice in the Pats-Jets game. What?
10-yard penalty.
What?
10-yard penalty.
You knew about this. And you still went ahead and you hired this guy. Hiring a 76-year-old manager who hasn't managed in about a decade, who has been on record as saying that he doesn't really understand today's player or the analytics. Hiring a 76-year-old guy is dumb. Hiring a 76-year-old manager with the issues that TLR has and two DUIs is even dumber. It might be the dumbest thing that Reinsdorf has done, and he broke up the Jordan, Pippen, Rodman Bulls. And this might be even dumber. How desperate do you have to be to hire a 76-year-old dude if you're willing to overlook not one, but two DUIs? And the thing is, he's not just overlooking it, he's endorsing it. In the last 9 years, this guy has more DUI charges than he has wins. There's your ratio. 2-0. Two DUIs and no wins. Yet you're cool with bringing him in still. Yeah, I get it. You're still kicking yourself for firing him back in 86. Yo, Jerry, we all got regrets. We all have regrets, but you can't go back. You can't go back and change that. Not now. He seems to think you can. He seems to think that he can right that wrong by hiring a guy 34 years and another, actually, two DUIs later. And by the way, let me make something clear about TLR's DUIs. We only know about two. We don't know how many other times this guy's been boozed up behind the wheel or how many other times he plans on doing it still. But if you're telling me that he never drove drunk from 07 until now and he happened to do it just once and on that one time he got caught, I'd be very surprised. Again, this DUI charge at the moment is just that, a charge. But if he's convicted or he pleads guilty, it's a sign that this guy's got a very serious problem. Man, he doesn't need a managerial gig. He needs help. He needs to dry out. And Reinsdorf needs to wake the hell up. Did they know? Apparently so. And if they did know, they don't give a damn. TLR DUI. Tyler Lockett is my guest. Tyler, it's been a minute or so. It's good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Good, good. Good to talk to you. So Sunday's game in Buffalo obviously did not go the way you had hoped. But as a team, what's your biggest takeaway from that game? And then how do you go about using that to prepare for the Rams this weekend?
I think the biggest takeaway was just understanding how they used a lot of other team schemes against us that may have worked previously in the past. And they created a really great game plan that ended up working in their favor against us. So it allows us to be able to understand how a lot of teams are trying to attack us, how they're trying to stop us, and it allows us to continually get better and progress as we try to reach the Super Bowl and as we try to win our division.
Tyler Lockett's my guest. Now, as an offense, the passing game in particular has been really playing at such an elite level this year. The chemistry that you and Russell Wilson have is really special. What's that chemistry like? How would you describe that?
It has a lot of downfall in practice, you know, but that's what makes it beautiful not only in practice but also in a game. Sometimes there's miscommunication, and you have to be able to work on those things, and you have to be able to throw a little bit more. And I think it ends up helping, because the more and more that you have experience with somebody, the more you're able to understand their framework, how they think, what they're looking at, and how they view coverages, and it allows you to be able to stay alive, especially on the scrambles.
Talking to Tyler Lockett, you know, one more thought about Russ. I mean, watching him from the outside especially, man, there's just something about this guy. Like, he's kind of hard to read, but he's fascinating, man. He's fascinating, and he's getting better. As somebody who plays with him, how would you describe what it is that separates him from the others and what makes him special?
I think it's just his mindset, just the way that he takes himself to a place of using his imagination in his favor, being able to see the game and play the game before he actually goes out there physically and has to do it. I think that's what separates him.
Tyler, what about your mindset and your imagination? For instance, in those moments, like during a play where you make a highlight reel catch, because you make a lot of them and you make it seem easy, it seems like you're really relaxed and really calm as you're making those catches. It seems like it's happening in slow motion. Does it feel that way to you? And in terms of mindset and imagination, how does that come into play for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it feels like that, but it feels like, honestly, any other catch. I think sometimes you don't really in clear view. Whenever you're actually doing a play, nothing really seems spectacular. Unless, like, for some people, they view stuff as one hand and stuff. But during the play, a lot of times what people see as spectacular, you're just trying to make a play on the ball. You're trying to do whatever you can to be able to catch the ball and to be able to put yourself in the best position to make a play on it. It's not until you see the highlight reel or just the game or the film after the game where you look at it and you're like, wow, how did I do that? You know, but when my teammates asked me, I said, man, that was just God. That's all I could say, because I was like, I couldn't tell you how I did that.
Tyler Lockett's joining us. You know, the other thing that is really impressive to me about your game is the fact that the guys around you constantly talk about how you make them better. As an example, DK Metcalf talks about the fact that the two of you feed off each other and that neither guy cares who gets the credit. I mean, I can almost hear it in your voice right now. That's not always the case on other teams. What's the vibe like then in the receivers' room?
Really, it's just about being able to have fun. Like, we enjoy each other's company. Like, we always hang out with each other. We always talk a lot. We play cards a lot. It's just the relationship that really makes everything go over and beyond, and I think it goes on the field, too. I think that's one of the things that we all do is we feed off of each other. We help each other through life and just through things on the field, and we all know that we're all going to get our opportunities, and there's going to be some games where we don't get our opportunities, or there's going to be some games where other people might get to do more than some of us. But at the end of the day, everything ends up playing itself out throughout the whole entire season, and there's enough love to go around, there's enough plays to go around, there's enough catches and opportunities and throws to go around. And so really it's just about loving and feeding off of one another. Trying not to care who gets the credit at all.
Yeah, and what we're talking about, I think, is culture. And that's a word that's always thrown around in sports. In every single sport, everybody's looking to find it, create it, develop it, implement it. But few organizations do it as well as you guys do. Like, what are some of the defining characteristics of the culture in your locker room?
I think it's just relationship. I think it's love. I think it's commitment. I think it's just being here with Seattle, it makes you – it reminds you of what it was like playing as a kid when you didn't have to worry about too much stuff. You just went out there and played, and you knew that the people beside you cared just as much as you cared, and they had fun just as much as you had fun, and it becomes a simple game again. I think sometimes a lot of people that I hear when they come from other teams, they just talk about how it's complicated and how it's not just football anymore. And I think Seattle does a great job of just trying to make it stay football.
Tyler Lockett's my guest. You're working with Old Spice. Break it down for me. What are you doing with Old Spice, and how can people get involved?
Yeah, so I got the chance to be able to partner with Old Spice just because we wanted to allow kids to thrive in the educational environment. Just being able to grow up in the environment, sometimes we're not given the same education. I know when I was in Tulsa, I went to Carver and Booker T., and I was on the north side, and that was one of the best schools just in Oklahoma when it came to middle school and high school. And so we were able to get that type of treatment and stuff. But there was other kids who didn't get into those schools, and now they don't get the same opportunities or the same type of treatment as us. Sometimes going to high school, it was about what middle school did you go to, and that allows you to get to the best high school, which was Booker T, and some people didn't even get there. So I think it's pretty cool what Old Spice is doing, because where there's a lot of African Americans at, the graduation rate might not be as high as a lot of other people when they go to high school. Just to be able to increase the graduation rates for young guys. And I think that is pretty cool, too, because when you get the chance to be able to view the film Black Boys, that's something that Old Spice is also sponsoring. And I think it's really cool because it allows people who don't know what it's like to be in the shoes of young African-American men, they can actually be able to sit there and see what life is like for us growing up, how people think that once it's a male that comes out of the womb, automatically you give them a football, and automatically you give them a basketball, and automatically you try to put them into the sports world because we think that's all we'll ever be, because that's all that TV and society ever shows us. And so I think it's a really good film just for people to be able to watch to understand what it's like for us and why a lot of us don't really have plan Bs. Like, we only have a plan A. It's either plan A or bust. And I think for people who want to understand and who want to get it, this is a film that will be able to help them get it as they just continuously watch it.
What a good message. What a good program. He is an All-Pro. He is a Pro Bowler. And he appeared courtesy of Old Spice. He is Tyler Lockett. Tyler, great to have you on the show. I appreciate that conversation. And I appreciate you, too. Great to get caught up. Thanks so much.
No, thank you. Have a good one.
Good night now!